you have two things playing out there at the same time, right? You have shrinking supply, and yet you have greater demand for it. And at the same time, you also have the issue of some type of crisis, you know, a monetary event that's going to drive people even more into what we all know are monetary metals. And so you add all that up, I see no reason to not remain bullish on gold and silver.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Gold has had a bit of a wild ride so far this year. Spiking inflation and the outbreak of war in Ukraine sent the gold price soaring to an all-time high in March. But since then, gold has slumped, and gold mining stocks have taken some pretty sizable losses. Inflation is still running hot and the Ukraine war continues, so why is gold not performing better? For an updated outlook for gold and the miners, we're fortunate to have Jeff Clark, senior precious metals analyst for GoldSilver.com, return to the program. We'll also get a performance update of his preferred basket of mining stocks, which he calls the GDX Jeff. Jeff, it's great to see you again. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
It's great to be back with you, Adam. This is a good time to be talking about gold and gold stocks.
Good. Well, look, we've had a lot of questions from the audience recently about what's going on with the precious metals and a lot of requests to have you back on here to give an update on the GDX Jeff portfolio. So thanks so much for making the time to do that. Let's just start at a high level, Jeff. What is your current assessment of the precious metals market right now?
Well, that is the question of the day, right? Or the question of the year so far, really, because gold is down from its highs. But I you know, a couple things I want to point out. One is gold is actually up year to date. It's up 2.7% here as you and I talk today. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 is down over 13%. The NASDAQ's down over 23%. Basically, everything is down except the U.S. dollar and gold. And so, in that sense, gold has been basically doing its job. And I'll also point out that gold is actually up in other currencies even more than it is in the US dollar. The World Gold Council actually came out with some research just this morning that showed gold is up anywhere from 2% to 17% more than it is in the US dollar in those other currencies. So in that sense, gold has been doing its job. Now, of course, we all thought it should be doing better, right? We thought it should be higher. It is off its highs. So that's the main question that I think, you know, we want to address. I think there are reasons for that. One is you do have a soaring US dollar. And I think anyone who's an active investor has looked at a US dollar chart, seen a headline, and knows that the US dollar has been soaring, and that does put pressure on gold because they're usually inversely correlated, right? So that's been a pressure point. You know, another pressure point is it was a rout. You know, there's a market sell-off and gold does provide liquidity in those environments. And when it's a sell everything climate, you're gonna have some sales of gold by exchanges, by traders, by institutional advisors, by hedge funds, anyone basically who gets a margin call. And so gold does provide that liquidity. So that's put a little bit of pressure on it as well. And then for silver, you know, there could be a concern there about its industrial demand if we get a recession or we get stagflation. All of those things for me, though, are temporary. I do believe there's going to be quite the rebound coming here when sentiment shifts.
All right. So let's go to that. So quite the rebound. When you say quite the rebound, what sort of magnitude are you talking about? Something to take us above the all-time high that we hit in March or back up near it or what?
Well, here's what I want to show, Adam. These are a couple charts that I showed in my talk at VRIC last week. The first one here is basically the biggest and sharpest sell-offs that we've had in gold and silver here over the past 15 years. There you see the sell-off in gold and silver back in 2008, and it only lasted 7 months, right? It was a very sharp sell-off, And then during the COVID crash in 2020, you can see how gold and silver sold off then. And then I put in the current sell-off. This is from their highs, their recent highs from last year. You can see that silver is down 16%, gold is down over 9%. And again, in a relatively short period of time. Now, one thing I'll point out though, Adam, is that gold sold off more than, it's rebounded here recently, right? So at the bottom of its sell-off here recently, it was almost the exact identical amount in percentage loss as it was during the COVID crash of 2020. Now, are you really going to tell me that, you know, what is happening now in the markets warrants a sell-off in gold to the extent, to the same extent that we had during the COVID crash? I think this hints that the sell-off is overdone. Now, I don't necessarily mean that the bottom is in, but what I do mean is that the sell-off is overdone and that it was a very extensive sell-off and that, you know, we should turn our attention to the rebound. Speaking of that, the second chart I showed was what those rebounds were when gold and silver rebounded from their sell-off. So there you can see in 2008, look at the rebound in silver from being down 57%, rebounding almost 450%, gold from 29, rebounding 166% during the COVID crash. Look at the rebound in silver. There's the rebound in gold. And then there's our current sell-offs in the far right bars there for silver and gold. Those green bars are projections, but all I did there, Adam, was just average the other two rebounds. That's all I did there. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do. I'm just saying, just showing what it could be if it averaged what the other ones did. So
really, you sure you're not guaranteeing a 300% increase in silver?
Right. I do think that's going to come. I mean, you know, my conviction in gold is strong enough that the big picture, the fundamental picture for owning gold has not changed whatsoever, despite the past 2-3 months activity in the price. Therefore, I do expect there to be some kind of rebound, whether it's a sharp rebound or a slow rebound. It's going to be more than a rebound. It's going to be a sustainable, real bull market based on core fundamental reasons that make gold more and more important as we go forward here.
All right. So real quick on that chart showing the rebounds, Jeff, do you have a general sense of what the duration was for the rebound to hit those highs there?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't document that in the charts, but in 08, that was about a 2.5 year rebound from its bottom to its top. In 2020, it was actually about a 7-month rebound. So there was a great variety in there, right? So it could be anything. What I think the message in that is that if one has conviction of why you would want to own gold right now, that this is the kind of thing that we might be reasonable, that might be reasonable to expect.
Okay. Don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say, given everything you just walked us through, would you be looking at today's lower prices, at least relative to earlier in the year, as a good buying opportunity, given where you think the prices are headed?
I know a lot of investors are sick and tired of hearing the words buying opportunity, right?
Yep. That's why I asked that. Yep.
For a while. But I will tell you a couple things. One is, this is so sophisticated, Adam. My biggest gains, frankly, have come from buying during panics and sell-offs and routes. My biggest gains by far. In March of 2020, during the COVID crash, I bought, you know, silver multiple times. I bought many mining stocks at that time, and that turned out to be extremely profitable. And, you know, my conviction for doing that, for taking that, you know, what was a little bit of a scary move, but a bold move, was my conviction of gold. I just did not believe that the gold bull market was over, that the reasons to own gold had gone away. Therefore, I thought there would be a rebound, and you know, that turned out to be very profitable. So that's how I'm viewing the current environment. Now, I was, you know, pretty much fully invested going into this sell-off. So I'm just basically holding. So, you know, that's kind of how I've handled that. The other point I wanted to make was seasonality. Now, seasonality doesn't come into play every year. It plays out about two-thirds of the time, one-third of the time it doesn't. But there's a couple interesting things. We're going into the seasonal lows for the year. For gold, ironically, one of the lowest points of the year is the 4th of July weekend. So it tends to bottom then, and then it never reaches that low again on a seasonal, average seasonal basis. So look for the 4th of July weekend as maybe a potential bottom for the gold price if seasonal trends play out. For silver, there's a very interesting thing, and it just baffles me, but silver's low has been July 29th on a seasonal basis very reliably. It's kind of bizarre. We've taken the average price, you know, gain and loss of silver throughout the year from 1975 and averaged it. And July 29th tends to be a very sharp drop in the silver price. And that tends to be the low for the year. Now, again, these are seasonal trends. They don't always play out, but it's very interesting to consider that. So the very end of June, very beginning of July could be a period where maybe we see a bottoming, and then prices tend to begin to rise in August, and then they really take off in September. That's seasonally the strongest month for gold.
All right, interesting. And funny, I might actually have the explanation for why the nadir for silver happens on July 29th, because my birthday is the day before. And I think it's the manipulators just trying to kick me one last time.
Well, you get the last laugh if you buy then. So
yeah, well, there we go. All right, I want to get to the miners in just a second, but when we head you back on in, I think it was last time you were in February, Jeff, you gave us your latest targets for gold and silver. Given everything we've just sort of talked about here, have you changed your targets at all in any way since then?
Well, you know, I hate your question, but for anyone who has not tried to do this, you know, give a prediction, you know, go out there in public and make it widely known what your price projection is and the date, and then see what happens. You know, it's very easy to be wrong because there's so many variables, there's so many factors, there's so many things going on. You know, you have to account for all those things and somehow predict them. And on top of that, you know, predict what else might happen and influence the price of gold. Now, that said, no, I really haven't changed my targets. You know, I still think gold's going to, you know, make a new all-time high this year, later this year. But the facts have changed. The facts on the ground have changed. And so that forces us to modify our projections, right? And everyone has to do that. So I do think that sentiment will shift back at some point and be more positive for, you know, the rebound reason that I pointed out. At some point there's going to be a shift back, and I do think that we will be back to new highs at some point. So I think it's reasonable to expect that later this year. There's probably going to be some event, either a short-term event or maybe a big picture event that kicks in all of a sudden and gold's off to the races again. We've seen this many, many times throughout history. And again, because of the fundamental core reasons to be owning gold at this point, at this time in history, I have to go with that. So there's another thing I wanted to point out. There's a recent survey that came out from the World Gold Council. I just saw it this morning. And they interviewed central banks on gold. And the number one reason they reported to the World Gold Council that they own gold is because of its, quote, performance during times of crisis. So that is the number one reason they're buying gold. Central banks are still buying gold. They're still net buyers. And that's the number one reason that they're buying it, because they think that the odds of a crisis are high, and therefore they want to hedge their currency and their economy. So that's a big hint, I think, that, you know, what everything going on out there, it is definitely not a time to abandon your gold.
Okay. Two kind of related questions to that. One is, there's been a lot of talk this year about the potential for the return of gold-backed currencies. And, you know, Russia's been basically making a lot of noise about doing that with the ruble. There is a Asian bloc led by China that is talking about kind of a basket of a regional currency backed by a basket of commodities, including gold. If you want to hear kind of the detailed case for all of this, I'll put up a video here that I did with Alistair McLeod, where he went into this pretty deeply. But Jeff, do you see, or let me put it this way, what potential do you see that having for influencing the gold price going forward? I mean, what one would think that, hey, if it's actually going to be used as a currency for global trade, well, then demand for gold actually could really spike. Obviously, we haven't seen that type of reaction yet, but what do you think?
The answer for me is, what happens to the monetary environment that would drive central bankers and government officials and politicians to want to do that? So the answer for me is, does the solution to the structural problems that we have in our system today include gold? If the solution includes gold, whether that's a gold standard, a partial gold standard, using gold as sort of a reference point, you know, its price as a reference for valuing other things, you know, however that might play out, if that's part of the solution, then yes, I think that could play out and influence the price. If gold is not part of the solution, then that's something that, you know, is probably going to have less impact on the price.
Okay, well, I'll admit to some, you know, a little bit of perplexion on my end that, you know, who knows whether this will happen or not, but,
sure.
You know, investors being investors, you bet on probabilities. So maybe somebody says, well, maybe there's only a 10% chance of this happening. You would still think that there would be some sort of notable bump in gold, you know, due to that 10% option value, but it hasn't quite happened yet. So obviously the market doesn't care what I think. Another question for you, kind of on the other side of something that could potentially injure the price of gold, which is, let's say peace is declared tomorrow in the Ukraine. You know, you just talked about that the central banks, their number one reason for buying gold is as a crisis hedge. Obviously, that's a driver of retail buyers as well. How worried are, and I shouldn't say worried because we're all hoping for peace in the Ukraine, but what impact do you think the outbreak of peace would have on the precious metals?
If it's real peace, that would weaken the price of gold temporarily. I actually went back this a couple of years ago and looked at every geopolitical event or conflict and how it influenced the price of gold. And in 90% of those episodes, Adam, the gold price reacted in response to the geopolitical event by rising, and then it softened in 90% of those cases after it ended. And so this is actually pretty common knowledge that gold does respond to geopolitical events, and then it gives back those gains when the geopolitical event is resolved. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that. But again, I didn't buy gold because Russia, you know, might invade Ukraine, so I better buy more gold. That was simply a, you know, traders reacting to that. We own gold for much more bigger fundamental reasons. And so while that might be a temporary thing, and I think we should all hope for that, right? That there is peace. But I think that I would view that strictly as a temporary event.
All right, great. All right, well, look, now let's get to the miners. So gold came down from its all-time high of, what was it, like $2,076 an ounce or something like that, Jeff?
Yeah, it depends if you use the intraday price or closing and, you know, which fixed price you use, but right around there, yeah.
Okay. And at the time we're talking today, I haven't looked at it in the past hour or two, but it was sort of somewhere around 1850 the last time I looked. So a lot of miners have come down, more than that in terms of on a percentage basis, which you would expect because miners are basically, you know, a levered play on the underlying base underlying metals price. So mining stockholders or enthusiasts who are saying, okay, ouch, those are some smarting losses from back from the May highs. From what I can tell here, it looks like things have based a little bit. You know, they're up from their lows in general, but they're still kind of down near them. What do you see as the prospects for the mining complex? Are they exactly the same as the prospects as you see for the metals, or do you see other elements going on there that were going to influence how they perform?
Yeah, so a couple things here. First of all, this is a good reminder that mining stocks are stocks, right? They're not gold. They're not silver. Gold, again, is up year to date. Miners are not. They're down, you know, anywhere from 20% to 50%, you know, depending on what you own. So that's a good reminder that, you know, we are speculating when we buy stocks. And is the bottom in for them? Well, if some of the other Wealthion guests are right and the stock market is going a lot further down, there could be more pressure on them, right? I think the key will be there, you know, how does gold respond? How does silver respond to that environment? Is there a greater margin call issue? Is there liquidity demands, you know, things like that? That could put more pressure on them, yes. But again, I think I'm confident in where the gold stocks are ultimately headed because I'm confident of where gold is headed. And so that forms the core basis for me as to why, you know, I even have bought a few more shares, even though I was pretty fully loaded up on the gold stocks. I did buy a few more. And again, it's based solely in that conviction of where I think gold is. I think they will reverse. In fact, Adam, I'll point out that many of them, including ones in the GDX Jeff portfolio, many of them are more oversold either today or last week, maybe at the bottom there, than they were during the COVID crash. On a technical basis, some of the stocks are actually more oversold now than they were back in the COVID crash. So that really shows you what kind of route it's been and just how oversold they are. And that, you know, it's reasonable to expect a bounce at some point. But that just shows you what kind of opportunity there is there as well.
Yeah. And I want to underscore that for a second. And hopefully I can put up a tweet here that I just put out last night where I basically say, I was showing the Bank of America's bull bear index, which is just pegged at like pretty much an all-time low. It's the same low that it was at back in March of 2020. And in the tweet, I just sort of, you know, snarkily remark, okay, in 2020, you know, we were shutting down the global economy due to the greatest pandemic that we've faced in 100 years. And now we're at the same reading here in 2022 because the S&P is down 15%. Right. I mean, it's underscoring what you're saying, which is we may be seeing a very undeserved overreaction right now, given the market concern today versus what it's like in a true crisis like we were seeing back then. Hopefully we are, for a variety of reasons, but certainly for precious metals mining holders, we'd love to see some sort of snapback rally or reversion, you know, to the mean, and see some of these losses retraced here pretty quickly. Let's get to the GDX, Jeff, if you don't mind, Jeff. So when you were on back in February, you put up a basket of stocks and said, look, there are ETFs out there. The two most notable are the GDX and the GDXJ. GDX is the larger mining company, an ETF of the larger mining companies. GDXJ is smaller mining companies from a market cap standpoint. And it's an ETF. So, it's a little more sophisticated than this, but not too much. They draw a line in market cap and everything above that goes into GDX and everything below that goes into GDXJ. And that gives you exposure to the sector. And so your return there is what's called the beta, which is just sort of the general return the sector is going to deliver. And the criticism of holding, you know, some people say, hey, that's the safest way to play the miners. And it largely is. But a valid criticism is, look, there's a lot of junk in there, right? You're getting all of the companies that you know, are above or below that line. And a bunch of them are going to do poorly, or certainly in the junior space, go out of business. And so a better approach is to follow an analyst who can build a basket for you of what are assessed to be the higher probability of success companies. And that way you're still taking a portfolio-based approach, but you're hopefully removing a lot of the crud from the basket, right? And what you said is, okay, I'm going to put together my basket and we'll measure it versus the GDXJ, because a lot of the companies you put in your basket, not all of them, but a lot of them are on the smaller side because they're explorers or developers. So Jeff, I'd love for you to give us an update on how that's doing. And if you can also in your answer address, when we talked again back in February, you had said that because of the pandemic, a lot of drill results for these companies were delayed because they just didn't have the staff to process them, and that we were going to be seeing over the ensuing couple of months kind of a catch up on the drill results. And I'm curious, you know, for your basket, have those results come in, and what do we know more about these companies than we did back in February?
Yeah, so that competition, you know, I picked a date for it to start, and that was in January. And so it's been about 5 months now. And the GDXJF is down more than GDXJ. They're both down. But yeah, the portfolio has definitely suffered in this sell-off. So that's, you know, understandable. And some of the stocks that I own are a little bit smaller, a little bit more speculative. And so when the market sold off, they sold off even more. So one thing I want to point out, though, is that when, you know, we started the competition when I announced it there in January, in the first month or two there, first couple of months, my portfolio dramatically outperformed GDXJ, like by 3x. That was in a rising environment. And in a falling environment, because I have a smaller basket and I don't have 100 stocks, GDXJ has, about 100 stocks in it now. You know, an index is going to move a little bit more slowly to the downside and a little bit more slowly to the upside. And I think that's a key that we want to focus on, is that if I'm right and I'm picking the better stocks, that portfolio is going to move up more than an index in a rising environment. So the question an investor has to ask themselves is, will there be another rising environment? Because if there is, I expect these stocks to rebound more than a big bloated index would. And so that's a key I think we want to focus on. As far as drill results, yeah, they're still kind of slow. You know, it's drilling, and it's especially the assays, though. The assay labs are still a little backed up. And with, you know, the strong start to the year, a lot of companies got more aggressive with drilling. They were adding rigs, they were raising capital and doing more exploration, more work, and backing the labs up even more. So that has hurt a little bit, because the news has been a little bit slower for most companies. There are exceptions, but generally we're still seeing slow assay results coming back. So I don't know when that's going to get resolved. It's like a lot of other things in society, right? You know, from supply chain, you know, at the grocery store and everything else. So I don't know when that's going to get resolved, but that has hurt a little bit, I think is fair to say. So, you know, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think that's what we're looking at is, you know, at some point, some kind of turnaround or rebound, and this portfolio outperforming a big basket of one that's going to move slower and has some stocks in it that, you know, I personally wouldn't want to own. So I would encourage people to stick with the program. If you did buy the GDX, Jeff, I would encourage you to stick with it. It's a one-year thing, and we're only 5 months into it. And actually, there's a second chance here, right? So if someone is interested in doing that and picking what I think are some of the better stocks, this is a pretty good time to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you get some much better prices on some of these things right now. And so folks, if to see the full portfolio of what's in the GDX, Jeff, and to see Jeff walk through in detail his rationale for why he put each one into the portfolio, just go to wealthion.com/GDXJeff, and you can see the video presentation there where it's totally dedicated to how he built that portfolio and why.
So Jeff, I should just add real quick that, you know, just some people have asked, you know, well, have you sold or anything like that? No, full disclosure, I've not sold one share of any of those. I still own all of them. I still expect them all to do reasonably well, or most of them to do reasonably well. Again, it is a basket approach because we can't guarantee that any one stock may not have an issue. But I've been even doing some selective buying, so I'm pretty full up on them. But I do own all of them, full disclosure, but I own, you know, 40 or 50 mining stocks. And these are the ones that, you know, for this competition, I wanted to have in that basket. So I'm still fully invested.
Okay, great. So you haven't sold any. In fact, you bought some. The GDX Jeff is the GDX Jeff, and we're going to have this year competition and see how it does. are there any companies that you would take out of there right now if you had the chance?
I don't think I would take them out because I don't like to trade. There hasn't been news such that, you got to sell that stock. Now, a couple of them have had news that wasn't necessarily all that positive, but it wasn't a reflection of management. And so therefore, I wouldn't take them out. The ones that offer, I think your next question is going to be the ones that offer the best opportunity right now for a buy.
You read my mind.
Some of these are down pretty hard. I mentioned that some stocks were more oversold now than they were during COVID. One example of that is First Majestic Silver. The stock price is actually a little higher than the bottom of March of 2020, but the RSI, you know, that technical indicator is actually more oversold now than it was back then. So First Majestic Silver will be a clear, easy buy here. And as I show in my VRIC presentation, which will be out, you know, in a week or two, the rebounds that stock has, the leverage it has to silver is quite dramatic. And the other one I have to point out is Cassiar Gold. Cassiar Gold is down over 35% now since the GDX Jeff officially started. So that's a screaming buy if someone wants that one. And by the way, I'll be on an analyst tour at their site up in BC this summer and get a firsthand look at that. But there's a very promising project there with some of the very best people, running that property and that exploration program. So I'm personally very excited about Cassiar Gold. So that's another one. And the other one's probably P2 Gold. That's been a newer one for me, but it's in the basket. It's down 30% as we talk. I'm pretty heavy into that stock. I really like the people that are behind that. And I had a very interesting take on them in my talk at VRIC. So that might be interesting for people to watch, but I really like the people and I like the projects that are involved there. So those are three just, you know, off the top of my head that have some very compelling entry points here right now. But again, I wouldn't exclude anybody yet. I'm going to stick with the competition. There's no stock there in that portfolio that, in my opinion, warrants to be removed. So I like it, that basket, Adam. I have to say I'm heavily invested in all of those. And I do think when gold rebounds and silver that this basket will do well. The only question is the timing, right?
Right. And then that's everything, you know, in life, everything's about timing. I will say, you know, I follow other precious metals experts that, you know, you're in communication with, Jeff. And I do see them, you know, echoing the sentiments that you just expressed there, that you've got some of these, what they consider to be sort of the best that are on sale right now. The other name that I've heard sort of mentioned in that same way is BlackRock Silver. Yeah.
Yes, BlackRock Silver is in the GDX, Jeff. Now, they had a circumstance where they came out with their resource estimate, their maiden resource estimate at their silver project there in Tonopah, Nevada, and I've been to that project. It came out after the analyst tour, and the expectation was a little higher than what it was. It was actually a very good resource. The expectation was higher. The stock sold off pretty hard, and then it fell even further during this recent downdraft, right? So, but the thing is, that's a very good resource. It was 42 or 47 million ounces. I can't remember off the top of my head, but the grade of that was actually the second highest grade that we have in an undeveloped silver resource right now. The only higher grade for a maiden resource was La Chispas from Silvercrest Metals down in Mexico, which is about to go into production, by the way. So you have a very high grade. The average grade there is very high for a silver resource. And of course, they're still drilling it. They're doing it right now. It's going to get bigger. And so I think that could be a very interesting play. And it's way oversold as well. So that's one that I'm sticking with. And it could be a very interesting play. And its neighbor next door, by the way, Suma Silver, is also a very good play. Again, it's a little more speculative because they don't have a resource yet. But the CEO there is a geologist, and they have another property down in New Mexico that's very promising. They're actually drilling more down there than they are in Nevada. So they look very promising as well. So there could be some very exciting rebounds in these silver stocks once the silver price itself, you know, forms a bottom and starts its next spike up.
Okay. So when you were on back in February, again, it was before the war broke out and all the craziness that's happened since, but these stocks were at higher prices. You were very excited about their prospects back then. And this industry, and you'll know, you know, how well this comment's going to apply to these companies because they're smaller and they're in development. But this industry has had some of its best cash flows ever, right? I presume that at least the mining sector is still remaining pretty darn profitable right now, at least as a sector as a whole, even though prices are a lot lower right now. So can you basically say that cash flow is on sale right now in this sector?
That's a good way to put it. Now, inflation, you know, let's be clear, inflation is a real concern for the miners. Costs are going up across the board. A lot of these companies use diesel. The ones in the GDX, Jeff, don't use a lot of diesel, quite frankly, including First Majestic Silver. They're actually building a LNG plant to power their, you know, provide energy. So they're going to be less dependent on diesel. Diesel's like 3.5% of their costs. It's very small. So they're less impacted by that. That's another advantage of that company. But for a lot of producers, this is a real concern. Inflation is a real concern. Obviously, energy costs and labor costs, both are going up. And then there's the supply issue. Supply costs are going up. And then there's a supply chain issue where maybe they're not getting things as quickly as they can. So those are all real issues. The gold price, it is true, the gold price solves all problems, though. So if we do see, you know, a resumption of the bull trend in gold and silver prices themselves, that's going to cover up a lot of, you know, these issues. Keep in mind that we're looking at the average price of gold per quarter and the average price of inflation costs per quarter. It's not a daily thing or a temporary thing. You know, it's what happens by the end of the quarter. It's what happens at the end of the year. Basically, is the average price, if costs go up 5% a year, but the gold price goes up 10% a year, your margins actually improved.
Right, exactly.
You know, despite higher inflation. So let's see how it plays out. You know, if this fall the gold price is stronger and the silver price is stronger, margins are going to go right back up for the producers.
Okay. And is it fair? I don't want to be sort of selling sunshine here, but obviously what's going to impact the mining sector the most is gold and silver prices, you know, moving back higher, right? But they don't necessarily need to move back higher for the stock prices to come up, right? Because we've sort of had a double whammy. We've had the gold price come down and we've had the general stock indices sell off, Right. So there's potential where either the indices could stay where they are, but the gold price goes up, and that's going to pull some of these guys up, or the gold price could stay where it is, but the indices go up. And because these mining stocks are equities, that would presumably have some sort of halo effect on them. So is this the right way to think about it? And kind of why I'm sort of saying this is look, this highly speculative industry, there's a lot of risk here. As I say all the time around these things, you should only put money in there that you can afford to lose. You know, don't throw all your retirement into mining companies. But as I sort of look at the landscape right now, I see multiple reasons for why, multiple potential catalysts for higher prices from here. And sort of to my comment about cash flow on sale, it just seems like, I like the fact that there's multiple potential catalysts. You're not just waiting for one thing.
Right. Right. Your question about the geopolitics is a good example. You know, we're not just waiting for that to end. You know, there are multiple bigger reasons to be owning gold. And I think, you know, at some point we're going to see a shift in sentiment. We could see institutional investors, hedge funds, for example, step in simply because the stocks are so oversold and they represent dirt cheap valuations, literally. So we could see them step in for that reason. So there's a lot of, you know, short-term catalysts that could, reverse things. And of course, there's a lot of big picture catalysts that could drive investors back into the gold stock. So, we have to point out again, Adam, that in the big picture, gold stocks, despite the run-ups they've had in the past, this recent sell-off has brought them back down to where they are dramatically undervalued once again, especially to the underlying metal, gold and silver prices themselves. Despite the pullback in the stock market, gold and silver stocks are dramatically undervalued relative to them once again. They're undervalued to most everything you want to look at. They're undervalued to themselves based on their own history of prices and PE ratios and things like that. So the opportunity is clearly there. So if one has conviction of where gold is going, I think it's reasonable to have conviction to where the gold stocks are going despite this recent sell-off. So that's how I view things. So,
well, super well said, Jeff. And I believe you and I have talked in the past, and I've heard this from others as well, that the mining sector is really underowned institutionally. And we don't need to go into all the reasons why, but 10 years ago, the mining industry was kind of a mess in a lot of ways in terms of quality of management and the balance sheets of these companies and stuff like that, which we've talked about in the past being the fundamentals are much stronger now in terms of, you know, how these companies are run and capitalized. I guess two questions. One is there an easy way to track institutional ownership of these companies? You know, is there an easy metric to go look at to see if we ever, you know, can see a noticeable uptick in percent of institutional capital going into the space?
It's interesting that there really isn't an easy way to do that. And what that signals to me is that it's as underowned as you think it is. You can look at institutional holdings per company. Now, if someone knows of a tracking service out there that tracks all institutional holdings of miners, I would like to see it. But the problem with a lot of those is that it'll include all mining, right? So it'll include base metals, oil and natural gas and things like that. So we don't really want that. We want gold and silver. So maybe Adam, we need to come up with a service that does track all that. So
hey, there we go.
Good indicator. But you know what? We know what the answer is right now. They're dramatically undervalued. They don't have a lot of exposure to them. So if we see a bump in the gold price and silver price and these margins start to come back up again, that's going to put a lot of, as I've said before, a lot of green on the screen for Wall Street traders and institutional investors, where they say, wow, there's not a lot of companies out there, a lot of stocks that are producing a lot of good free cash flow. The tech sector is struggling. A lot of major stocks are struggling. So, you know, there's not going to be a lot left. It could be just the gold and silver companies. So that would be very interesting to pull them back in.
Well, it would be, and the reason why I'm underscoring this is this could be a tremendous opportunity for mining companies, the mining sector, and this is sort of what a lot of long-term, long-suffering mining investors are kind of. This is their long game, which is to hang in here long enough to be there when institutional capital begins to come into the space. And we've been hearing the same argument from the Bitcoiners for the past, 10 years, which is, hey, just wait till Bitcoin gets big enough where the institutions start taking really big stakes, which has begun happening over the past couple of years. And of course, the Bitcoin price has gone bananas until recently. But the logic is the same for the precious metals mining space. And Jeff, you know better than I, but the market capitalization of this space is not big, and it's now notably lower than it was when you came back on in February making that same point. So if even a tiny percentage of the capital that's on institutional balance sheets right now says, hey, there aren't very many good places to put capital now, but we're seeing that these mining stocks are cash flow positive and that they're headed in the right direction, let's start riding that wave, it could take initial good results and just send them to the stratosphere. This doesn't happen very often, so I don't want to oversell this to people or give them the impression it's going to happen tomorrow or at all. I just want to say, when we've seen this happen in past, that's when you see the returns for some of these companies that are like in the thousands of percents, right?
Yes, the gold price will spark a lot of buying, but institutional investors, the big money, as it's called, when that starts to pour in, for whatever reason, it doesn't really matter what the reason is, right? When that starts to pour in, then these stocks really are going to see a multiple in return. Now, not every stock is going to go 2, 3, 4, 10x, right? It'd be the smaller companies that are having success that see the biggest gains. But yes, Adam, it's hard to oversell that point because there are hedge funds out there that have more assets under management than the entire market cap of the gold sector.
God, that is just crazy.
So there are mid-size hedge funds out there that have more assets under management than the entire silver sector. So
sorry to interrupt, but I just have to ask this question. So what's keeping one of them from just coming in and buying the whole thing? Right? Just taking all the supply off the table and immediately, folks are going to, there'll be some demand for what's left, and that's going to raise the price of their holdings. Like, why does somebody kind of try not to corner this market?
That's what a lot of us have wondered in the industry. When is a Tesla and that sort of thing going to come in and kind of shore up their supply? We've seen some of that already with some manufacturers coming in and wanting to buy actual miners. It's a little complex because it involves pricing. There are contracts involved. There's competition involved. So I don't know how all that's going to play out. I think that's a reality, though, that at some point, especially with silver, if silver supply gets tight and there are indications that supply is still falling, silver supply has been falling, total silver supply has been falling every year since 2016. And despite last year's bump, it does appear that silver supply is going to be down again last year. So it's really interesting to see, to consider how this might play out. But the bottom line is supply is tight. It's probably going to keep getting tighter, and not just because of supply, but because of demand. And with the green energy and how critical silver is in the green energy movement, demand is only going up. And supply continues to go down. So this is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. And that could be another catalyst for the price too, right? If you all of a sudden see headlines, silver supply is in jeopardy or demand is, untenable or something to that effect, that could drive in a lot of the mainstream and drive prices even higher.
Yeah, and we're going to have to wrap it up on this point, but I do just want to underscore and I've had this conversation recently with a number of experts, Michael Every from Rabobank being a great one, that kind of the world order has changed this year. It is now shifting from this era of plenty and prosperity and shared prosperity with a lot of cooperation between nations, now heading into a period where there's a lot more uncertainty and supply of key resources. We're beginning to realize sort of how fragile the system we had in place is. And now countries, it's becoming a little bit more every country for itself in terms of saying, hey, I've got to secure my supply. And so you're beginning to see sort of this scramble and competition for the world's remaining world-class resources. And Jeff just mentioned that the global silver supply has been shrinking year over year. Silver is a critical industrial metal. And it's, I'm not a geopolitical analyst. I can't tell you what's going to happen next year. But I can certainly make a good argument that the major world powers and major corporations as well will probably be making, will be taking more aggressive steps going forward to secure their silver supplies. And so, you can look at that macro trend and say it's pretty hard not to see that equaling higher prices for silver going forward if those companies are competing over it. I see you nodding here, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. Supply is probably going to be a very real issue, again, especially for silver. There's a lot of above ground supply, but it's not necessarily in the form that an investor would need it, or it's not necessarily in the form that an industrial user is going to need it. So it's a very real issue. So you have two things playing out there at the same time, right? You have shrinking supply, and yet you have greater demand for it. And at the same time, you also have the issue of some type of crisis, a monetary event that's going to drive people even more into what we all know are monetary metals. And so you add all that up, I see no reason to not remain bullish on gold and silver
going forward. Yeah. All right. Well, look, we're going to have to end it there. Thanks so much for your time today, Jeff. For folks that want to follow you and learn more about you and your work, where should they go?
Well, goldsilver.com. I love working with Mike and being on interviews with you too, Adam. It's a lot of fun. And we have a lot of interesting content coming out next week as well. So if anyone's interested, sign up for the newsletter at goldsilver.com. And I do disclose my mining picks all on Twitter at The Gold Advisor.
Okay, great. When we edit this, we'll put up the links to goldsilver.com and your Twitter handle there. All right. Well, folks, a reminder, if you want to get the full Monty of Jeff's rationale behind the GDX, Jeff, get the full list of companies that are in it and all the reasons why Jeff put them there in the first place, just go to wealthion.com/GDX Jeff, and you can watch that video after here. If you've not seen it yet, definitely go watch it after this video ends. I just want to reiterate, these are highly speculative assets. And if you do not have a lot of personal experience investing in them to date, definitely if you invest in the mining space, then follow the lead of some person that spends their time doing nothing but understanding this space. There's a lot of newsletters out there. I think Jeff's The Gold Advisor Twitter handle is one of the best free resources out there, where you're able to kind of pick his brain and you don't have to pay somebody's fee. But anyways, whomever you pick, I recommend you follow somebody. And if you have not traded them yourself, they're highly volatile. There's some important things you need to know. I highly recommend you do so, working with a professional financial advisor who can help you determine what a safe and relevant portion of your portfolio is to place in this space, which companies to buy, how much of them to buy, and then also are there hedges that you can put in place to protect yourself from some of the downside volatility of these companies. If you don't have a good advisor to work with on that, just go to wealthion.com. You can talk to one of ours for free. And then last, folks, if enjoyed this conversation, would like to see Jeff come on again in the future, please support this channel by hitting the like button and then clicking the red subscribe button below if you haven't already, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. Jeff, thanks so much for giving us so much your time. Everybody else, don't forget to go watch wealthion.com/GDX Jeff if you haven't already. And everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
Thanks, Adam.